Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. At 8:30 on May 21st, 2025, please turn off or mute all electronic devices. This meeting is taking place at 1740 West Adams Street, Boardroom B, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007. Our mission statement, the Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public as well as the welfare of animals by enforcing licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. We do have Assistant AG Mark Harris present, and Dr. James, could you please do the roll call?
Sure. Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Rick?
Here.
Thank you. We have quorum. So we're going to start with Section 2, the initial investigative review and action. For case order, we'll go to number 2, case 2562 first. Then we'll go down to 8, 9, and 10, which is 2568, 2569, and 2570. And then we'll go back to the top and work our way down. Number 13, case 25108, will be after the last informal. So, Tracy, could you please read the front load on case 2562?
Yes. Case 2562, the complainant is Susan Jansen. The respondent is Rebecca Housley, DVM. Complainant, a former practice manager at Allegheny Commons Veterinary Hospital, made allegations of improper veterinary care provided by respondent to the following patients: Jack, a 9-year-old male English bulldog; Bun, a 4-year-old female mixed breed dog; and Nala, a 10-year-old female golden retriever mix. The respondent is not the responsible veterinary for the premises. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find for Jack, ARS 322232, number 11, gross negligence, moving forward with surgery despite abnormal blood work, specifically low albumin, the overall medical management and medical decisions with respect to the care of the dog, and suspecting neoplasia without evidence. ARS 322232012, as relates to ARP 11-5011, failure to provide partial exceptional procedures by not monitoring the dog and recording vitals due to the prolonged recovery period. The dog remained intubated for 4 hours. And ARS 322232, number 21, as it relates to R311502L7A, for failure to document the concentration of fluconazole administered to the dog. With respect to Bun, the committee recommended ARS 322232, number 11, gross negligence, lack of pain management provided to the dog before, during, and after the surgical procedure, and delaying the surgical or the surgery knowing a foreign body was likely present. With respect to Nala, ARS 322232, number 11, gross incompetence, for the medical decision making for the administration of the medication for cortisone and using cortisone to monitor a patient with hyperadrenocorticism. And ARS 322232, number 21, as relates to ARS, R311502L7, for failure to document in the medical record that the cortisone was administered to the dog on October 11, 2024. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. So the respondent is present with counsel?
With counsel.
All right, go ahead and come forward.
Thank you, good morning. I hope you've all had a chance to review the May 15th supplemental statement that Dr. Housley submitted with the accompanying radiology report.
Can I just have her introduce herself? Sorry.
Yeah, Dr. Go ahead and say your name.
Dr. Rebecca Housley.
Thank you so much.
And David Stoll.
Thank you.
Appearing as legal counsel for
and
Dr.
And then you have 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. I hope you've all had a chance to review the May 15th supplemental statement that Dr. Housley submitted along with the accompanying radiology report and highlighted portions of the medical records for these cases. Again, this complaint was filed by a former disgruntled office manager who questioned the way these cases were handled. However, none of the owners had any concerns or complaints about the veterinary care that was provided for their pets. We feel we have addressed the concerns expressed by the investigative committee, especially those involving the dog Jack. In that case, the committee proposed a gross negligence violation for Dr. Housley having moved forward with the surgery and suspecting a neoplasia without any evidence. Dr. Housley moved forward with the surgery in that case in part because she suspected a neoplasia based upon her interpretation of the radiographs. Apparently no one in the investigative committee read the x-rays the way Dr. Housley did because, again, they felt that she moved forward with the surgery without any evidence of a neoplasia. Within days of the investigative committee, we had the radiographs reviewed by a board-certified radiologist, and her findings confirmed an underlying neoplasia. So Dr. Housley clearly had a reasonable basis for suspecting a neoplasia, and her treatment of Jack, including the surgery, was medically appropriate. Having addressed the issues and the concerns of the investigative committee and Dr. Housley's written statement, and there being no significant factual disputes that would necessitate moving this case to an informal interview, we ask that the complaint in this matter be dismissed with no violation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You can go ahead and step back. And no complainant. So, Dr. Nosley, you are the lead.
Okay, thank you. This one's complicated by the fact that this complaint was brought by an employee and was largely based on her observations as a manager of the practice for a while and a sometime assistant, apparently. The complaint involves three separate patients and is very much about the case management of those three. There are also some other veterinarians involved in these cases. The investigative committee, as we heard, recommended multiple violations. And in my opinion, we need to hear further from the complainant as to her specific observations regarding those three cases. And certainly, in my opinion, we need to hear further from the respondent concerning these three complex cases. So with that, I would make a motion to move case 2562 to informal.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to move to informal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
And I would...
Oh, sorry.
We don't have a complaint here, but I believe that from that standpoint, we need to hear about these cases and the case management but in the interest of time and... we need to only deal with what we deal with as a board. I would like to somehow get the word out that generalities about the practice, interactions between the complainant and the respondent and their other people, which I would like to see us focus on the case management only. So unfortunately, we don't have the complainant here to hear that, but for our sake, it'd be nice if we focused on the cases.
Well, it is recorded, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Case number 8, 9, and 10, so case 2568, 2569, and 2570. Tracy, are those all the same front row?
Yes.
Can you please go ahead and read those?
Sure. So case 2568 is Marcella Grant-Fallon BVM. Case 2569 is Christine Seams BVM. 2570 is Anna Wilkins BVM. complainant is Sandy Charles. On September 26, 2024, Harley, an 8-year-old female English bulldog, was presented to the emergency facility due to renal failure. Due to the degree of azotemia and hyperkalemia, complainant was advised the dog might need dialysis treatment if treatment doesn't work. On September 27, 2024, after further diagnostics, the dog was diagnosed with a left ureteral obstruction and surgery was performed to remove the obstruction. The dog remained hospitalized for monitoring. On September 29, 2024, Dr. Graham took over the dog's care. Due to the dog's static renal values, Dr. Graham suggested dialysis as the quickest way to minimize uremia and allow the dog to feel better sooner. Complainant declined. Dr. Seams took over the care of the dog overnight. Complainant stated that she witnessed Dr. Seams pulling the dog by her catheter and feeding tube as if they were leashes. On September 30th, 2024, despite two aggressive therapies, the dog's renal values remained static. Dr. Graham again suggested dialysis and went over the process. Complainant agreed and the dog was transferred to Arise and Dr. Wilkins. Complainant was advised of the risks associated with dialysis, and the dog was anesthetized. Dialysis was started. Later that evening, Dr. Hopi arrived to take over the care of the dog. While being rounded, the machine's alarm went off, indicating the filter had clogged. Blood began to manually return when clots were noted. Blood return was discontinued to avoid introducing a blood clot to the dog. The dog arrested and CPR was initiated. Complainant was notified and resuscitation efforts continued for approximately 30 minutes without a response from the dog. The dog passed away. And the committee concluded that no possible violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss these issues with no violation, and the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. We have the respondent. Or council present?
I'm just for the
Okay, thank you. For all three?
All three.
Okay, thank you. So we do have the complainant present. Could you please step forward?
Good morning.
Can you please state your name?
Sandy Charles.
Thank you very much. And you can go ahead and address the board.
Yes, thank you. I have all that memorized, tattooed on my brain. I'm going to read what I've put together. So thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm here to bring to your attention, as we just heard Tracy say, a distressing and heartbreaking situation involving the wrongful death of my beloved English Bulldog, Harley. Her life was needlessly cut short on September 30th, 2024, due to what I know was gross negligence. A failure to meet even the minimum standard of care and unethical treatment of veterinarians at Avet Gilbert and Arise. Negligence, cruelty are unacceptable in a profession rooted in compassion and integrity. Medicine is a juggling act. I know this firsthand. My background is in biology. I conducted cancer research at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. Recovery is not one size fits all. You must treat the whole body, not just the lab numbers. And these vets did not do that. They acted recklessly and rushed Harley's care without taking her full picture into account. Harley was admitted to the ICU on September 26th, as we heard, after complications from a kidney stone. On 9/27, she underwent life-saving surgery, and I'm forever grateful to that team that night. They gave me hope. Harley responded well. She was alert, engaged, even playful. When I would visit her, she was up and barking. She was fighting. But that all changed on 9/29. Everything changed. Harley was reassigned to new doctors, and continuity was broken. Dr. Branfone, despite only being on her case for hours, just a few hours, pushed aggressively for dialysis. She said, "I'm still learning, Harley," while in the same breath telling me, "A dialysis team is ready." If you're still learning, why are you pushing an invasive high-risk procedure? That same night, Dr. Sims mishandled Harley, and like you just heard Tracy say, yes, like a leash, pulling like this, her catheter and feeding tube as a leash. Harley was weak, fragile, and recovering. She deserved gentle care. Instead, she was treated with force and disregard. Despite Harley showing clear signs of improvement, more yellow urine, increased alertness, responsive behavior, They forced dialysis just 3 days post-op. Her potassium was elevated for many days before she went into that surgery. Any competent medical professional knows that's a red flag. Her heart has already endured days of extreme stress. You don't add pressure to a struggling heart, you protect it. Her kidney numbers were not worsening, they simply weren't falling as fast as the vets wanted. But that doesn't mean she was dying. It means they expected her to heal on their schedule. And medicine doesn't work like that. Healing is not one size fits all, like I said. Rushing a dog into dialysis because her numbers weren't dropping fast enough is reckless. It's panic, not care. This was not a life or death moment yet. We were not there yet. This was a chance to wait, to watch, to let her heal. But they didn't listen to Harley. They didn't listen to her body. They only listened to each other, and they got it wrong. That night, Dr. Wilkins, as you know, called me the machine, got a blood clot, and Harley never came home. Her death was not inevitable. It was preventable. These doctors treated her case from one narrow angle and ignored the larger picture. They overlooked gentler, viable options, other modalities with documented success in kidney cases. What happened to Harley was not just a medical misjudgment, it was complete collapse of responsible veterinarian care. The standard of care fell below the minimum. Their decisions were inappropriate, unethical, and devoid of compassion. And from my point of view, after listening to all of these hearings since October, trust in veterinary medicine, it is an all-time low in the valley, and you have to ask yourself why. I am living proof why, and it is your chance to fix it. I'm not a vet, I'm not a medical expert, but even I knew this wasn't right. Every cell in my body told me to wait and to protect her. And that's clearly noted in the notes how nervous and anxious I was. But how do you go up against experts telling you that they know better? I'm not here with misdirected grief. I'm here with clarity. I'm here because Harley deserved better, and so do all the animals who walk through your clinic doors. I ask that you hold these veterinarians accountable. And to the vets who stole Harley from me, I do not want to live with this anger in my heart every single day, so I will work to forgive you. But I beg you, do better, be better, never put another dog or person through this trauma. And to my sweet Harley girl, I promised you I wouldn't stop fighting for you, and I won't.
Thank you very much. You can go ahead and sit down. So we have Dr. Wright, you are the lead on these cases.
Yes, thank you. So I do have some questions about what's going on here. I mean, this is a really difficult case, of course. There's multiple doctors involved. But I do have some questions around the decision to go to dialysis here. When I look at the results, we can definitely see the BUN, the creatinine being elevated, the potassium being elevated. But after surgery, I see that potassium dropping, and that's kind of more where I look at with dialysis. The BUN and creatinine are important for sure, because it's going to make you feel nauseated and feel gross, but the potassium is going to be more of the critical thing. And with that correcting and with urine being produced, I don't quite understand where we were going with the dialysis at this point. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts or concerns or questions around that, but I don't know why we went that fast when we saw correcting values and an actual appropriate urine production based on the records. So I don't know if anybody has any thoughts there, but personally I have more questions.
So what would be the case management going forward without dialysis?
Continued medical management. Even trying things like furosemide, any kind of medication to try and produce more urine, but the kidneys were working. We weren't anuric. I mean, we weren't even old urine. We were producing appropriate urine based on what I'm seeing here. It takes some time for those to come down, especially when you have insult to a major kidney. Mm-hmm. And this is not something that occurred overnight, so that other kidney had been working harder for a while. Mm-hmm. So it was exhausted. So you just need to give these kidneys some time to catch up is my thought process. Now, of course, this is hindsight, but yeah. Rushing straight into dialysis, especially in an invasive procedure where we're placing indwelling catheters, and even in the notes saying we're going to come back multiple times for multiple treatments, but the judgment was it's going to make us feel better faster, and that was the reason to do this. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand the jumping straight into dialysis here.
In terms of the specific gravity, mm-hmm. the urine specific gravity, did we ever demonstrate ability to concentrate?
I think in there, it was hard to read this blood work because everything was very small, but I saw 114.
Was going in there. Way back, they were all close to being fixed.
Yeah.
Way back.
Mm-hmm.
So I question whether this animal had ability to, what it appears to be a chronic renal failure. And
yeah.
Then we had this acute renal failure insult with, mm-hmm. with the ureter. So my concern is that wasn't that a communication issue. I don't know that there was full understanding that this was a likely, based on history, a chronic renal failure case.
Yeah, I agree. This isn't acute on chronic. That other kidney was doing the work of both kidneys for a while. How long? Who's to say? It's hard to say at that point. But no, I do agree. And then once that functioning kidney became exhausted and was just like, I can't keep up, that's when we started seeing clinical signs. But the problem there is we have one that's got hydronephrosis from the blockage and has so much damage that we got to catch up, and the other one that is exhausted but still working, just to the best of its ability. Mm-hmm. But the fact that potassium was dropping is telling me it was functioning. They said, yeah, the BUN and creatinine is going to take a little bit more time to drop in some cases, but that potassium corrected real fast. And when you correct that potassium real fast, that tells me those kidneys are functioning. And was jumping straight into dialysis the best decision? That's where I'm just, I don't know. I need a more discussion with that doctor.
The prognosis.
Yes, no, I agree with that, yeah.
If we really understood the prognosis in this case, maybe we wouldn't have gone to dialysis.
Yeah.
So it's a communication.
I kind of feel like the communication is a big deal, too. Mm-hmm. The question on whether to go to dialysis or not, I think we could probably argue both ways, right? Like, I think if we heard from the doctor there, we could probably come up with reasons why we would go to dialysis in this case, and yet I hear what you're saying in that maybe we shouldn't have, but does that really fall below any kind of a standard? I don't think either decision is necessarily wrong. So I guess I'm like,
I
understand that like this is a really difficult case, but I think the bigger issue really to me centers around how well was this owner informed that this wasn't just an acute thing that could be fixed and we're going to go back to normal, healthy, normal life, right?
Right.
Like, I think there was more there than that, but...
No, and I agree with that, too, like I said there. But like I said, what just sticks with me is that it says we're going to get the patient feeling better faster. And that was kind of the judgment there. And I'm like, that's not what you use dialysis for, especially when it already says you're going to be doing this multiple different treatments and multiple different, like, we're going to come back in a couple days, we can go home between treatments. So we were saying, this is something that's going to be happening multiple different times. How does that make us feel better faster? So like I said, it's the medical judgment that's there is also where I have questions. But yes, communication, I agree.
Yeah.
So I just had multiple questions. So based on all that, I make a motion to, I guess, here's the other question. All three of them, or do we have concerns with just one? But I guess probably putting all three initially and then going from there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
because they're all together.
The stuff pops up as you do.
Okay, and then we can talk about everything else with the feeding tube and the catheter and all that, too. So I'll make a motion to move 2568, 2569, and 2572 informal to seek more information.
Can we motion that all at once?
Oh. All right, I will make a motion to move 2568 to an informal to seek more information.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
I'll make a motion to move 2569 to informal for seeking more information.
Second.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
And I make a motion to move 2572 to informal to seek more information.
Second.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 1, case 2561. Tracy, if you could please read the front look.
Sure. So case 2561, the complainant is Beth Engenthal, DVM. The respondent is Ryan Slokers, DVM. On October 1st, 2024, Kathy, a 9-week-old female shih-tzu chihuahua, was presented to the respondent for a spay procedure. During the spay, respondent ligated and cut the right ureter. The error was realized, the spay was completed, and the dog was referred out for either a ureter repair or emergency nephrectomy. The dog was transferred to the Scottsdale Veterinary Clinic where an emergency nephrectomy was performed. And the committee concluded That no violations of the veterinary practice act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay, thank you. And then do we have the respondent present?
David Stoll, caring for Dr. Slaughter's monitoring only.
Thank you. And the complainant? No complaint. So, Dr. Nosley, you are the lead.
Okay, thanks. In this case, first of all, I would say that the respondent took all appropriate actions, had very good communication, took responsibility, including financially. All of that is very admirable. We don't always hear that kind of thing. And I would commend the respondent for that. However, those things don't negate the fact that a serious surgical error occurred that everyone's in agreement. And so even after all the information and hearing the investigative committee, audio, I'm having a real hard time understanding how this could occur. In my experience, I've never heard of a ureter being ligated in this manner. Certainly in ligature of the uterine body, I've heard of that occurring. But this structure was actually traced cranially in the dog's abdomen, and then therefore misidentifying a ureter as a uterine horn. Followed it cranially and then ligated it after not being able to identify an ovary. And there's a difference between an atrophic ovary and no ovary. The respondent said that he had had cases of atrophic ovary, and I've had a few cases of atrophic uterine horns. I'm not sure about the ovary. The respondent completed the ligation of the ovarian vessels on the first side appropriately. Everything was done appropriately. And I wanted to ask the respondent one question. You know, how long was your initial incision? And the reason I wanted to know that is the way you can find that other horn is tracing back to the bifurcation of the uterine body. You can grab it with a spay hook, but then you trace it back and see that it's connecting to the uterine body. And that wasn't done. I was also going to ask if two ligatures or one ligature was placed on that, what ended up being the ureter. So I would have preferred, and I think it's appropriate to see that bifurcation of the two horns, excuse me, at the body, and then this mistake would not happen. I also don't understand why in looking for that ovary at the cranial end of the structure he was following, when there was no ovary identified, and why wasn't it noticed that this structure was going right to the kidney, flowing to the kidney. In this procedure, we ligate vessels. There wouldn't have been any vessels. So I'm just having a hard time understanding how this happened. And so all parties in this case agree it's a serious surgical error, and in my opinion, can't be dismissed without a violation. So I would find a violation in this case and offer a consent agreement. We did get a chance to hear from the respondent, so I don't know if it's more appropriate to make it another informal or not. So.
I mean, we did in the sense that we have the response and the IC, you know, information. So
sure.
I think that we did, and I think what you said is nobody's disagreeing in the situation. But to me, just because you didn't mean to make the mistake, right, and you did own up to it, doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Exactly.
And if we treated, you know, situations like this in that manner, then...
Yeah.
Wait.
Right.
That's feeling. This is one of those difficult... Again, they're all difficult situations because we're basically judging people in their lives and stuff.
Sure.
And it's a profession. And you kind of have to look at, is there like malicious intent? And I don't see that here. I see the veterinarian did and took all the appropriate steps afterward and said, I made a mistake. We need to correct this. So I think that does go in favor, but
absolutely,
that doesn't change the fact that the outcome was still the outcome.
Yeah.
I think it changes the fact that, do we look at like a malpractice or gross negligence, or we look at something else? So I think that's where it comes in important. And I think we can probably have that discussion without going to an informal at this point, because it did happen.
So I think
we can move forward. I think there is the exception here that the mistake did happen and we had this outcome. I don't think anybody's arguing that.
Right.
It's just what's the degree of the violation. And I think the fact that we took the right steps, didn't try to hide something, didn't just hope for the best and say, oh, maybe that wasn't your urine, closed it up and waited 4 days to find out that the animals were really sick.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that we did this immediately is helpful in that case, so I think that does factor in. But I agree, there is a mistake here, and something has been done about it.
Okay, yeah.
And I'd agree. It seems like it would be more difficult to find a ligated ureter that would do that. It's obviously what was ligated wasn't properly identified.
Yeah.
So 9.5-week-old puppy.
That's step one, and then step two, once that was determined, it was handled completely appropriately from that point forward.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So because of that, then do we look at it's more a failure to follow acceptable procedures, or is it gross negligence? And I went back and forth on that a lot. The surgery and making this error, I ultimately fell on the side of gross negligence for... the improper surgery that occurred. So I would do a consent agreement and find a violation of 32.22.32.11 gross negligence, for ligating a ureter during an ovarian hysterectomy, resulting in the need for a nephrectomy.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. For a violation. Roll call?
You don't have to for that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
Okay. So at this point, I'd like to make a motion to offer the respondent in 2561 a consent agreement, accept the proposed findings of fact. As the board is finding the fact.
Second.
Voice vote, okay? No.
Yes.
Voice vote. Okay, all right.
Sorry.
So, okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Then I make a motion to accept the proposed conclusions of law as the board's conclusions of law.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
And now I believe we ask if the licensee has had any previous violations.
Any previous actions?
Actions, none.
No, none.
Okay. So this part's hard for me because I happen to agree with the respondent that CE and ovarian hysterectomy doesn't really fit. I think this case is a deficiency in anatomy, not in surgical technique. So what I was going to propose, because like I say, I don't think this is ever going to happen to this respondent again. And so in terms of a sanction, I would simply propose that we would ask the respondent to review resources of his choosing on the anatomy of the female dog reproductive system and review resources on the anatomy of the canine urinary system, and then just present us a report or a bibliography. yep, I reviewed all this anatomy, to me would satisfy what went wrong in this. I know that's unusual, but instead of just putting a minimum fine or civil penalty, or having this respondent do CE and ovarial hysterectomy just doesn't seem to fit to me.
And I mean, I'm sure there are CE for spays and neuters, but it's probably more high volume, the high quality stuff as opposed to like basic techniques. So you'd be looking at like abdominal surgery or something.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fine. I mean, even having to write a surgical report about exactly what you're doing in the surgery, like we used to do in school, not one of those quick ones that we see that we have after we've all been out for 20 years and you kind of do quick things, actually saying, okay, what are you doing? Cutting these tissues, identifying them.
Yeah.
I mean, just writing it out and saying, okay, now
I'm
clamping the proper ligament and pulling it out, breaking the suspensory ligament, talking about all that stuff individually, because then we can say, okay, we know you're going through the full steps of the surgery.
Review the anatomy and then prepare a report, a surgical report.
Yeah, detailed surgery report of every step in the surgery.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think CE is going to be all that helpful for a doctor that's already done these. This is just one of those things that unfortunately happened and something that was recognized. So again, the education level's there. It's just, it's just unfortunate stuff that happens and it's unfortunate, but it was handled as best as it could. So yeah, I think that's a good plan in my opinion.
Okay, good. And that to be submitted, that plan within 60 days. No civil penalty. If not signed within 35 days, move to an informal.
I'll second that.
Dr. Nosky, can we just repeat what...
A summary of what the...
Of what we're going to ask for in the consent agreement.
Thank you.
First of all, to review the anatomy of the reproductive system of the dog and the urinary system of the dog, and then give us a bibliography on what resources were used. That could be very simple. Miller's Anatomy, and I read through the anatomy. Yeah. Then,
is there something like Miller's that we can reference in the order, such as Miller's?
Well, that's why I asked for a bibliography, because there's a lot of resources out there. He might say, I'm going to go online and watch videos, and that'll satisfy it.
Well, and I just want to make sure that without more direction, we're going to have very little, say in not accepting it.
I mean, the major, there's a lot of them, you're right. The major ones would be like Slatter's for surgery or Folsom?
Sure, Folsom.
The purple one, And then, I said Miller's. So, I mean, I guess we could say, for example, and say like those three, but I don't think we'd limit it to those
right.
three.
Right, and I wouldn't want to direct them to anyone.
Yeah.
But just some guidance, so that when it comes back to you.
Yeah.
I mean, my take on the fact that his statement said he's done over 10,000 spays is he is a high volume spay neuter doctor. Because otherwise, I'm not sure you'd get to 10,000.
Yeah.
But I'm way more than I've ever done. But I'm just wondering if, the shelter vet high volume spay neuter document, right? There's a protocol for high volume spay neuter. Maybe that's what he would want to look at.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, possibly, but if it's a quick thing where it's like a stamp and you just fill out the size of your suture and that's it, I'm not going to accept that as surgery report.
No, it's like the standards. It's
but
the Association of Shelter Veterinarians puts out the standards for high volume spay neuter, and it goes into whether you put in a catheter, what kind of blood work you do, how you prep the animals, it's all the standards for spay neuter.
I think he might already be familiar with it based on his response to the complainant, because there was a question on the age of the pet, and he said, I follow the ASV guidelines.
Well, that's why I'm thinking he might already use that.
Right, so then we probably don't want that as the additional resource for him to review if he's already using, if we've already got an issue, right?
Yeah, I just go back to...
That's a good point.
To the thought that we should give some kind of reference, I feel like he already has anatomy, too, because we all got out of vet school and we all had anatomy. And he clearly didn't know, right? So just because he might have referenced the ASV guidelines for the age doesn't necessarily mean he knows everything that's in there. Obviously he doesn't, or else he wouldn't have... I don't know. I was just throwing it out there as maybe that's a one of the things we could reference. But
I mean, it sounds like a legitimate, valuable reference. So.
I guess it depends on what we're trying to get out of it, right? Because if we're focusing on the anatomy, because that's where the error was, not necessarily like the rest of the procedure, that the ASV guidelines are going to be like where you place your cut on the abdomen so that you have a faster approach, a more direct approach, not necessarily diving into the view of the anatomy.
Yeah, I just worried because some of the commentary was like, you know, tracing it back to the uterine horn and or the body. And I just, when you are high volume spay neuter, the technique is different.
Yeah, but we don't have different laws for high volume and low and
right.
high quality, so I don't accept that personally. It's the same surgery.
I think the
standards are set for this, and the standards are out there. So if you're a high volume doctor and you're abiding by those standards, I don't think any one of us can say they're following below the standard of care. I think in this case, it was a legitimate error, and he even acknowledged the fact that it was a mistake. And I don't necessarily know that. I think he knows the difference between.
Well, I think that's our argument as to why we're saying do a surgery report. But I don't. So what's your suggestion? Basically?
No, my suggestion was just to give another resource. If we were being asked to give resource, I'm fine with what you guys are suggesting.
Yeah,
I was throwing out another resource.
We already voted on that.
He can use any resource, but if it's a report that I'm like, this is not enough, you're doing it again.
So do we want to include those three, or do I include the fourth one?
I mean, we can, but I'm not going to give them a list of these are what you're going to do, because it sounds like we're directing them at that point.
Okay.
We can't do that as a government agency. But it's like, if he needs an example, it's like, well, there's this, there's that. Just like if someone says, what CE should I take? Well, you figure it out and you tell me. That's up to you and your lawyer.
So we're just giving you an example.
So I mean, we can definitely include it in there, but I don't want it to make it look like we're limiting it to just those.
Right.
Okay.
And then with respect to what you expect to see as far as a surgical report, is there any more elaboration on that?
On your details that you guys referenced?
I want the full surgery report. It's like I should be able to perform the surgery based on what he tells me.
And when you say a full surgical report, is that...
The patient was presented...
Is that buzzwords in the industry that he'll understand what you're looking for?
I would hope so, but I wanted to say, like I said, the patient was presented for surgery and dorsal
intense
recumbency
detail.
And was prepped and scrubbed with this. A 15 or 10 blade or whatever was made used to make a midline incision. The linea was identified in size. I want to know everything that was done.
I
type that
say
up on every one of my surgeries. I expect every other doctor to do that too, and I do not like those tiny little three-sentence surgery reports. I can't stand them.
I think if that's the expectation in answer to your question, I would say a full surgical report including preparation, surgery, and recovery, because otherwise I could see him just giving us the surgical technique. I wouldn't necessarily have.
And I would highly recommend he listens to this to see what we're looking for, because I will make him do it again if it's up to me.
I would suggest that we add the word detailed, full and detailed.
Yeah. Like I want you to hearken back to junior year of vet school and expect your professor to say, you need to redo this. So I want a perfect surgery report, because, again, an animal lost a vital organ because of this. It's like, I don't think you're a bad doctor. I don't think anything like that, but I want to know you know what you're doing.
Tracy, we did.
Yes. One other question I had, was there a period of probation?
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that within 6 months easily.
We could make that 6 months instead of a year.
Okay. And this is honestly, it's busy work, I hate to say it.
It is.
It's like, I don't think the doctor doesn't know what he's doing, I just want to make sure. And this patient deserves something.
Okay, so that's the terms of the sanctions then? So we need to vote on that? So we have the proposed, we have a second?
Second, I guess.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Riggs?
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay. Section 2, number 3, case 2563. Tracy, can you please read the front load?
Yes. Let me grab it here. Case 2563, the complainant is Aaron Kern. The respondent is Darcy Nightingale, DVM. On October 3rd, 2024, Yimza, a three-month-old female sphinx cat, was presented to respondent due to chronic hypoglycemia and hypothermia issues. The cat was hospitalized for diagnostics and treatment. The cat was no longer responding to dextrose treatments, and her glucose continued to decrease. The cat began to seize. The pet owners elected to humanely euthanize the cat. The complainant expressed concerns that respondent overdosed the cat. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. Respondent?
I'm David Stoll, appearing for Dr. Nightingale, monitoring only.
Thank you. And no complainant present. So Dr. James, you were the lead.
Yeah, so this was a case which probably has left a lot of questions on behalf of the owner as well as the veterinary team, because they don't really have a good answer for what happened here, why this kitten was in the state that it was in. So I think that always makes it a little bit difficult. In looking through the records and what was done, I think part of the concern is this doctor was an intern, but working under another doctor, had multiple times requested, you know, oversight on the case. I think all of that was done correctly. I think the steps that were taken were appropriate. I think there was concern around the necropsy and how well that was communicated to the owner, and it sounds like the doctor was actually out of town. They were waiting until she got back in town to jointly call this owner, and owner called while she was gone, and the case was handled. So when she got back, this was already over. So I mean, I guess in looking at this, I think it's a very sad case, but I don't necessarily think I can find anything that falls below our standard of care rules or statutes.
Okay.
So I will make a motion that we support the investigative committee's findings in the case of 2563 and dismiss the issue with no violations.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 4, case 2564. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes. Case 2564, the complainant is Barbara Jean McCaplin, and the respondent is Sarah Yeager, DVM. On October 14th, 2024, Tesla, a 11.5-year-old male boxer mix, was presented to respondent to have a mast cell tumor removed from the right rear leg. The tumor was diagnosed the week before via in-house cytology of a 5-needle aspirate. Respondent discussed the concern for recurrence due to location and tumor type. Surgery was performed and the dog was discharged later that day. On October 19th, 2024, the surgery site had dehiscence and a sedated corrective procedure was performed. On October 21st, 2024, the site dehisced again and respondent recommended bandaging the area, allowing for second intention healing. On October 28th, 2024, complainant requested the biopsy results. Respondent advised that complainant had declined to see pathology of the tumor. Complainant stated that she declined sending the fine needle aspirin out, as that was conducted on October 7th, not the histopathology of the tumor that was removed. Complainant stated that she went for a second opinion and was advised that respondent did not get clean margins when removing the mass. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. Motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. No respondent and no complainant in this case present. So Dr. James, you are the lead.
So, I mean, in reviewing this case, I think that, you know, there were certainly maybe some communication errors here. And I don't say errors, but opportunities maybe is a better option. Mainly around this biopsy and the reason we do biopsies when we take off masses, like as far as evaluating for clean borders, because it definitely sounds like the owner felt like she had approved it or would have approved it, and the paperwork clearly indicates that she didn't approve it. So, I mean, I think there was some communication issues there. I certainly think that at the point that you have a mass removal that keeps dehiscing, you're starting to wonder about the tissue that was remaining and the health of the tissue that was remaining. And maybe that would have been another option for communication. But ultimately, I don't know that any of those things necessarily fall below our standards. And the documentation, the medical records was all there. So I don't really know that I can find a violation. I think just in my head, these were some of the things that were going on. I don't know if there's any other thoughts from the board.
I was curious about the orientation of the suture closure. Like, to me, that's not the direction that you would close that. And yeah. So was, you know, whether we had left tissue behind because we don't know, or because we did not that to me was
the tension of where it was.
Yeah, that should have been this way, not this way.
Yeah.
So
that's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, I don't like the orientation of this.
No.
I mean, again, maybe sometimes a mass presents in a way where it's like you have to go across lines of tension like that, and you can't really do the right way. But I'm not thrilled with this. Also, if I were to go something like this, it'd be nice to see stay sutures, or not stay sutures, I'm sorry, tension relieving sutures, mm-hmm. stents
yep.
in there.
Yep.
Or if I'm worried about movement, I'll even throw a band on this leg for a week just so they can't move it in that first initial healing and then come back and replace it. So, I mean, there's things that could have been done to mitigate this. It is just also a complication. I mean, it's just one of those things that happens. So it's decisions in there, but I'm not thrilled. I think there could have been major or better decisions made, but I mean, is it major problems? I don't know, but there could have been better decisions, I think.
Right, and did we know better?
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, whether or not we had still cancerous tissue there, that was kind of that, not set up for success.
No. And that can happen.
Yeah.
I mean,
but you should...
The techniques.
Yes, you can still have issues, but ideally you would start off with this.
Yeah.
Because, and to me, that's... I
just don't know that I can say that that's below the standard of care.
I agree. It's
Well, one thing about the tension,
we don't know
that jumped out at me too, the incision. But then there are references that show tension lines down the thigh that way.
Yeah.
I personally never done an incision like that. Sometimes I'll split the difference and do a diagonal wherever I can get loose tissue to get it covered. And I agree, maybe there's some surgical error here, or not, I wouldn't call it error, but a better way of doing it.
Yeah.
But then we didn't see the tumor.
And that's,
we didn't see it. We didn't see what condition it was in. We didn't, mm-hmm. there were a lot of things that, and quite honestly, everybody does things a little bit differently.
Yeah, that's right.
Even if you ask all of us here in this room, we're going to all do things a little bit differently.
Yep.
So I can't say that. I agree, I would never have done it that way, but I don't think that means that they're wrong. I don't know what happened.
And that's the thing, is that you said this is a bummer of a situation. I see things that could have been done better, but do I see a violation?
Right.
No. Do I see a letter of concern? Yeah, I mean, I think a letter of concern would be fine, because, again, I think there are the surgically accepted procedures, and you can vary from them, but I just... When you start seeing this, and I don't see the mitigating factors, again, with stents or a bandage or something external to coapt this to deal with that extra tension we know is going to be there, especially when I look at the length of this incision and I think of the 3-to-1 ratio, it's like that's a massive defect. Honestly, this probably needed some kind of rotational flap or something to close. There's a lot of different ways.
We didn't see the tumor. We didn't evaluate the scan. We didn't.
Exactly.
All we saw.
So I could go as far as a letter of concern personally, but I couldn't go further.
Well, the other thing about that, if we decide to do a letter of concern, maybe we could include communication. If this doesn't sound like this was a financial thing with this owner, this is just I don't understand, and I think I'm on what I'm declining here. Not even that, but she thought it was concerning the aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm the surgeon and I'm dealing with a mast cell, which is totally different than other types of tumors because of the margins are critical, the extension of the cells, it's critical. I might go, no biopsy?
Yeah.
Can we confirm that?
Well, and that's where I was like the communication around why it's important to do the biopsy and the fact that that can affect the healing in your wound.
Well, it's admirable that we did an aspirate and knew what we were dealing with. I always aspirate anything I think might be a mast cell because it's going to dictate my surgical.
And any mast on a boxer is a mast cell.
Okay. Yeah.
No, true. No, I agree, though. I completely agree with you.
Do you think part of the letter of concern might be just better documentation? Because if you guys would have seen it in the record written why it was this way, right? Or there was a follow-up conversation with the owner as to, you know, why the histopathology, you know, is recommended and declined. Just because sometimes it's separate, you know, like what the veterinarian recommends and then the financial piece the team goes over. And if there's a disconnect there, the veterinarian may not know, you know, that there was the disconnect. But same thing with your surgical technique. Like you said, you can do it all kinds of different ways and all of you may have done it different. But if you understood, you know, why that was peculiar, why they chose
to do it that way.
So maybe it's better documentation.
This is why I did this, yeah.
Right, it's just saying in the letter of concern, hey, this could end up being a problem if you don't have better documentation in your record and, you know, documenting some of your communication points, then maybe that covers all the things.
And it's one of those things where if this wouldn't have dehissed and everything would have healed up like it was supposed to, we would never have known it would have had it happen. And it wouldn't matter if it was in there, but it's better to, if you're going to go away from that standard, it's better to say, okay, this is why I chose this. And I'll do that in some reports and certain things. So I think, yeah, that's a good suggestion too.
So I think in the case of 2564, we're in agreement that we find no violations of the Practice Act or rules, but issue a letter of concern regarding ensuring that we're using the best surgical technique for proper healing, as well as communication with the owner on why the biopsy may have been important, and just general communication on what we were dealing with in this case, because I think that might have been a little bit questionable too. And I think that's all we decided in the letter of concern.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of comes down to Halstead's principles, really, is
so
the crux of that.
The motion is to dismiss with no violation and issue a letter of concern.
Second.
Okay. Motion is second. Just for the record, Ms. Solomon stepped out for this vote, so she will not be voting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
She abstaining?
Abstaining. Abstaining.
Recuse.
Oh. Do we have any opposed? Motion passes.
Do we need the form?
Thank you. Okay. Section 2, number 5, case 2565. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes.
Oh, and then Dr. Nosley's recused on this case. Sorry.
Okay. Dr. Nosley's recused. Mm-hmm. Okay. Case 2565. Complainant is Nicholas Barber. The respondent is Ruben Meredith, DVM. On August 1st, 2024, Leo, a 9-year-old male pit bull, was adopted by complainant. He brought the dog to respondent's premises where his half-sister, Ms. Gamble, is employed. The dog was placed under Ms. Gamble's name so complainant could get an employee discount on a mass removal procedure. The procedure was performed the following day, and the dog was boarded afterwards at the premises for a few days. On August 6th, 2024, the dog was picked up from the premises and returned to Ms. Gamble's home for aftercare. The following day, the dog damaged the room he was being confined to in Ms. Gamble's home. Complainant wanted to rehome the dog due to his destructive behavior and did not want to deal with the dog. On August 8th, 2024, the dog attacked one of Ms. Gamble's dogs. Ms. Gamble and her mother also sustained injuries while attempting to break up the fight. Later that evening, Ms. Gamble brought the dog to respondent's premises for humane euthanasia. Complainant expressed concerns that the dog was euthanized without his consent, and respondent is the responsible veterinarian for the premises. And the committee had concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222-3218 as it relates to Article 11502F, The owner of the animal did not sign the euthanasia consent form, nor was a verbal authorization witnessed by one other and recorded in the medical record. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. And after the committee meeting, the respondent's hospital manager provided the signed euthanasia form and computer screen showing that the dog was under Ms. Gamble's name.
Thank you. No respondent and no...